With me on the phone from Toronto is Professor Catherine Carstairs, author of Jailed for Possession, Illegal Drug Use, Regulation, and Power in Canada, 1920 to 1961, which is out now on University of Toronto Press. Welcome to the program, Catherine.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So first off, could you tell me why you chose the years 1920 to 1961?
Sure. Canada's first drug law actually passed in 1908, so it's a little earlier than my book began. But in the early 1920s, there was a huge anti-drug panic, and there was new legislation passed practically every year during the early 1920s. And this significantly increased the penalties for illegal drug use. Previously, they'd been quite minor, but in the early 1920s, you get the introduction of six-month minimum sentences for possession. So it really changes the lives of drug users. And so what I really wanted to look at was what was the impact of that very harsh legislation on the lives of the users themselves. And it ends in 1961 because you get a new drug law in effect in 1961 that again changes the penalty structures and officially removes the minimum penalties, although in actuality it was really until the late 1960s that judges continued to impose six-month minimum sentences. So basically I really wanted to look at sort of that period of extremely harsh drug legislation, which is often referred to in the United States context as the classic period in which really the only approach to drug use was a highly criminal approach in which users were highly stigmatized. There was no treatment facilities in effect, and you know, basically users were sent to jail for long periods of time.
Wasn't there also a highly racist discourse surrounding drug legislation at the time?
Oh, very much so. I mean, that was the reason for the drug panic in the early 1920s. Basically, what happened is in the early 1920s, you're also having a concerted drive for Chinese exclusion from Canada. In 1901 and 1904, you'd had increases in the head tax that Chinese had to pay, but there was still a very strong anti-Chinese sentiment in Canada, which in the aftermath of World War I, which brought about increasing labor unrest and high prices in Canada and a lot of sort of difficulties in terms of resettlement. There was a recession that followed the war. That anti-Chinese sentiment really began to escalate with returned soldiers angry that, you know, the Chinese had taken their jobs and things like that. One of the things that they used to condemn the Chinese is the fact that the Chinese supposedly are spreading drug use in Canada. And so there's all these narratives told about sort of evil Chinese traffickers seducing young girls and getting them into drug use, and then the young girls become prostitutes and become infected with venereal disease and end up having sex with Asian and black men. So it's this extremely racist, extremely sort of panicked discourse that emerges in the early 1920s, which is why you get such severe penalties in that time period.
Would you argue that drug laws in Canada were born out of these power struggles?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the increase in the penalties against drug use had everything to do with the drive for Chinese exclusion from Canada. And while I think we would have had drug laws anyway, there was some legitimate concern about addiction and about the harm that these substances could cause. And there was an international movement around the world trying to get drug laws in place. So, I mean, I think Canada definitely would have had laws against opiates, which include opium, morphine, and heroin, in any case, but they wouldn't have been nearly as harsh or as severe as they were.
What do you know about the resistance to this new legislation?
There really wasn't that much resistance. The Chinese community occasionally in their own newspapers published warnings and things like that about the extent to which, you know, they realized that they were being targeted for drug offenses. But you know, within the Chinese community itself, there was real fear about the fact that, you know, they were being targeted. There was concern about addiction within the Chinese community itself. Certainly in China, the nationalists in China at the time were extremely critical of the drug trade that was going on, because it was largely, in the 19th century, it had largely been the British who were bringing opium into China. And so they saw it as part of the colonial enterprise was addicting the Chinese and bringing them down as a nation. So elite Chinese often tended to be highly opposed to the drug trade as well. And obviously there were really, legitimate concerns about addiction. So, as a result, there wasn't a really concerted defense because, people felt sort of ambiguously about the issue. And what happened within the sort of Euro-Canadian community is that the users themselves tended to be regarded as victims in the popular press. And so anyone who became an addict was seen as sort of an unfortunate soul in the initial stages of addiction. But then, once they started committing thefts or things like that to support their addiction, they were treated quite differently. And so the sort of rhetoric of victimhood allowed politicians to say, oh, we really need to do something about this crisis. We've got all these young men and women who are becoming enthralled to the slavery of drugs. So we need to do something about it. So they passed these really harsh penalties, which I think they thought were going to be directed at the traffickers, but in fact, generally ended up being used against the users of drugs themselves. But once users hit the criminal justice system, they tended to be sort of the quote-unquote dope fiends for whom authorities had relatively little sympathy. And so once they reached the court system, there was no sort of outcry about how these people were being victimized by the laws.
What makes your book a social history of drug use in Canada?
It's more than just a social history, certainly, in that I, definitely look at the formation of the laws as well. But what I was really interested in was the users themselves and what happened to their lives after these harsh drug laws went into effect. And so one of the things that was very apparent was that drug use became much more harmful for the users themselves as a result of these laws. In the early 1920s, most people who used opiates had smoked opium. By the late 1920s, it's clear that people are increasingly injecting heroin or morphine rather than smoking opium, because smoking opium is smelly and bulky, and it's very easy to find people who are smoking opium, whereas, heroin and morphine could be more easily smuggled. So there were very legitimate reasons for people wanting to switch substances, but that also meant that they switched from less addictive substances to more addictive substances. Opium and heroin are all opiates, but heroin tends to be much more addictive. And also, of course, injecting compared to smoking is also a much more harmful practice for people's health. So those were the kinds of changes that I was interested in studying. I also saw the sort of impact it had on their work lives and relationship lives as well, because once enforcement stepped up, people increasingly spent their lives cycling in and out of jail, and this just completely disrupted every other aspect of their lives. So it became hard for them to maintain stable relationships, either romantic relationships or other kinds of family relationships. It became hard for them to find steady work that they could keep for any length of time. The fact that the price of drugs increased enormously also meant that they were increasingly unable to sort of hold a working class job and actually pay for drugs. So people increasingly had to get involved in other aspects of the illicit economy.
How would you say your book informs the present drug debate in Canada today?
I think it shows that we really need to be careful about the unintended consequences of drug legislation. The politicians who passed legislation in the early 1920s were dealing with what they saw as sort of a very legitimate issue, and they were sort of panicked about what was happening to young people. They felt the desperate need to address this social problem, and they did so through strict penalties, which in many ways just worsened the problem. And so, you know, today, for example, when we're in the midst of a new panic about drugs, which, you know, seem to emerge fairly regularly, drugs tend to be quite malleable and open to panics of various kinds. Say, for example, there's, you know, been a lot of panic over the past few years about methamphetamine. And so there's this immediate tendency to be, okay, we need to react, we need to do something. And, you know, that is often do something in terms of criminal legislation, which may not be the most effective way of dealing with the problem. So I think, you know, one, we need to pay really careful attention to what the right solutions are instead of just being very reactive. We need to think more about drug use in the context of people's total lives. You know, one of the things that's been pretty constant from the 20s to the present is that drug users tend to be drawn from the most, or at least the drug users that come to the attention of the criminal justice system, tend to be drawn from the most marginalized segments of society. And so drug use is usually just part of a larger constellation of issues that people are facing in terms of, you know, low skill levels, lack of education, often, you know, lives that have been destabilized by violence or domestic abuse. And so we need to really address the whole constellation of problems that are faced by drug users rather than just focusing on the drug use themselves, which might actually be a fairly minor component of the overall problem.
That's really great, Catherine. And where can people find your book called Jailed for Possession, Illegal Drug Use, Regulation and Power in Canada, 1920 to 1961?
Sorry, where can people find it?
Yep.
Oh, you can buy it online through either the University of Toronto Press or it's available through Amazon as well. And hopefully it's available in at least some bookstores, university bookstores, but I'm not too sure.
And how long did it take you to write this book?
Ooh, that's a hard question, actually, because it emerged out of a dissertation that I wrote as part of my PhD. And so the dissertation took 2 or 3 years to write, and then there was a sort of long period of revisions that followed and periods of time when I was working on other projects and things like that. So from start to finish, I guess it took almost 10 years, but it wasn't sort of, you know, that wasn't the only thing I was working on in those 10 years.
Okay. How do you think your book contributes to the present literature on drug use in Canada?
Well, there's been a lot of people who've worked on sort of statistical studies of drug use or social studies of users from the 1970s to the present. You know, when drug use, especially marijuana use, exploded in the 1960s, it really spurned a huge field of study. And so basically my book, you know, expands on that by looking at the history of drug use before the 1960s, because we have very little sense of how drug use has actually changed over time, because the research, you know, the research has largely been done by sociologists and anthropologists, and while it's very, very good, much of it, their focus has been quite different from mine as a historian.
Great. Thanks, Catherine. Would you have any final words to add?
No, I don't think so. That's about it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We have been listening to Dr. Catherine Carstairs, an assistant professor in the Department of History at the University of Guelph, speaking on her new book titled Jailed for Possession, Illegal Drug Use, Regulation and Power in Canada from 1920 to 1961. I'm Candace Moores for CKDU-FM in Halifax.